Have roll call.
Director Muthart.
Present.
Director Ohilski. Director Storm.
Present.
Vice President Wright.
Here.
President Baltimore.
Present.
Thank you.
Let the record know that Director Ohilski showed up almost immediately after roll call. All right, thank you. With that, can I have a report out of closed session, please?
Yes, Mr. President, maybe for the last time, members of the board, staff, and audience, the board did go into closed session at 6 p.m. tonight in regards to two categories of closed session items. First, under existing litigation, under Government Code Section 549.56.9(d)(1), we discussed the groundwater adjudication and the ISJ, and there'll be more on that later. Second, they discussed the bankruptcy. In both cases, they did not take any reportable action. The second category is under Government Code Section 54957, Personnel Matters. At that time, they reviewed the negotiated general manager's contract and approved it. It is on the agenda tonight under consent items, and there are copies of that contract on the back table.
Thank you.
That concludes my report.
Thank you. With that, I'd like to move to agenda item 7, presentations.
And it's now the time. Emphasis is few.
I'd just like to take this moment here at the podium and be short and sweet with that, because I have other opportunities to speak tonight. And it's just a simple thanks for it was an honor and a privilege to serve 4 years, didn't seem like 4 years, our community. Learned a lot, have a vast respect for our staff and general manager and our people that, firms that we counsel and contract with. You got to be in that position in order to understand the intricacies that goes on. So with that, thank everyone in Los Osos, and I'll pass it to Director Muthart.
I'll take this opportunity to not be so short, maybe a little sweet. Short in speeching, not in height. Mr. President, fellow board members, future board members, and members of the public. In 4 years, the Los Osos Community Services District has undergone some major changes, reached milestones and accomplishments. This has happened by a tremendous amount of hard work. 4 years ago, when I started my term as a director of this organization, was turning the ship around, so to speak, from a very destructive time. They had come a long way, but there was still much to do. There was still the bankruptcy, several lawsuits pending, unfinished projects, and the organization was in disorder. My goal as a director was to focus internally, get our house in order, and see this comeback continue. I'm very proud of what we have accomplished as a board, and I feel that the Los Osos Community Services District is as strong as it's ever been, and is in a place now to serve the people of this district in a positive and productive way. Organizationally, we have new computer systems for our utilities business, administration, human resources, and finances. We've brought our accounting systems up to government accounting, and have received an unqualified audit. We're properly staffed with qualified people in the right positions. Despite what is sometimes heard during public comments, we are building strong working relationships with our state, county, and our partners in the basin. I encourage you to continue building these relations as it will be much more beneficial to the district. It is my firm belief that the strength of any organization is in its people. So is it with our district. If the Los Osos Community Services District was a car, its staff is the engine. As directors, you control the steering and the accelerator. We all know what happens if you run your engine too hard or steer your car down an unfit road. But if you're mindful of your engine's capabilities and where you're steering, you will get the performance you desire. We have a well-developed capital improvement plan. Please keep focused on the plan and provide staff what it needs to accomplish the improvements, being goals and resources. We have a basin management plan. I encourage you to continue to work with others, with other purveyors, and together we will be successful saving and managing the health of our basin. There would be no winners in trying to take over Golden State Water at this time. I encourage you to enthusiastically pursue a community facilities district to ensure the financial equity of managing this basin. Please continue to push forward to have meters put on every well. I suggest that you consider utilizing a strategic planning session early next year to help discern and plan for activities, as it will help staff to plan and enable them to propose budget and staffing adjustments. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank our staff for the support and hard work you've given us over the last 4 years. Especially, I'd like to thank Kathy for your leadership. Thank you for coming in and, like a dentist, drilling into our decaying financial system and giving us new life. Margaret, thank you for all you do, especially for hanging in there as interim general manager for us. You did a tremendous job. I know we will both look back with a feeling of great accomplishment. And of course, we couldn't have done it without AMPI's help and guidance. And thank you for your continued support and willingness to do what it takes to get the job done. Always professional and still able to make it fun. Mike, it's been a pleasure working with you. Your guidance and counsel has been so valuable to me and the district. I feel we are very fortunate to have you on our side. I would also like to thank Rob Miller and the Wallace Group. Finally, I'd like to thank all my friends throughout the Los Osos community for your support, passion, and honesty. And of course, a special thank you to my wife, Julie, who's been with me every step of the way. Good luck and God bless.
Okay, thank you. We have a member of the UAC here for also certificates, Lee.
Good evening, everybody. You guys aren't getting to get off quite that easily. You got one more thing to have. I've had about 50 years of experience in this field. I've been on both sides as a director, as a committee member, and as a staff member. And I moved to Los Osos about almost 3 years ago now. And right now I'm on the board of the S&T Mutual Water District. I went from the Metropolitan Water District to the S&T Mutual, from one of the largest water districts in the world to probably one of the smallest. But I feel like I found my place. Anyhow, I am here representing the Utility Advisory Committee to present certificates of appreciation to President Baltimore and Director Muthart. So if you gentlemen would please come forward, I would like to extend the extreme thank you from your Utilities Advisory Committee people and for everybody that I know that has benefited from your leadership. And I have had a great pleasure of benefiting from that. Thank you very much.
Director Ohilski.
Thank you. Until Leonard had pointed out how long I'd been here, I hadn't realized that. I guess I am the senior board member. So I'd just like to say a couple of words. I'd really like to thank both Leonard and Craig for their service to the community. And I think one of the things that's really hard for people to understand or relate to, and Leonard alluded to this, I thought, pretty well, until you actually sit up on this side of the dais here, I mean, nobody really understands the commitment that people make, and nobody really understands that it's actually part of your life. I mean, it's just something we don't walk in here and deal with, but it becomes a 24/7 type situation. So I really think that the time commitment that both of you have made and the public service commitment, I think that's really critical. It's a public service commitment because you don't get paid for your commitment here. But you feel a duty or a responsibility to serve the public, and I really appreciate that. So speaking as, I guess, the senior board member, I think we're going to really miss your knowledge and skill. And as we move into the future. And I look forward to working with our new board members, but I will say that I do really appreciate the efforts that you guys have put in over the last 4 years.
Thank you. Dr. Storm?
Well, as the junior most board member, I'm unfortunately put in the position of following all of that. So I don't want to trample on those words, but I just wanted to personally thank Director Moodhart, who I met originally serving on FAC, and Director Baltimore, who I beat in fantasy football this year after he graciously brought me into the league, and look at what thanks I show. Anyway, I really enjoyed working with you guys, and we'll stay in touch, and just my personal thanks. I don't want to trample on the more eloquent words.
Thank you. Thank you so much. With that, thank you. I'd like to move to agenda item 7B, which is a public hearing to consider adopting an ordinance amending Title II.
Good evening, Board. This item is a public hearing to consider adopting our ordinance amending Title II of the District Code regarding leak adjustment credits. It was brought to your board before in October, and then you asked us to go to the UAC, so we went there and got a lot more specific language, brought it back last month, and we're given even more direction on what to do for this. So let's see. This is a reading by title only, and I'm going to defer to our district legal counsel on the procedure. What am I supposed to be doing right here?
Okay. At this point, once you're done with your presentation, the public hearing is open,
okay.
And people will have the opportunity to comment. As my understanding is that there was one board directed at the last meeting, and so this is simply we can go forward today. If you make any additional changes today, then we're going to start the process over. And that really wasn't a change. It just didn't get carried forward in the agenda item.
So, again, that clarification is the elimination of the word indoor on the fifth whereas, so that it would read, whereas the district desires to limit the criteria for leak adjustments to only pipe bursts.
Correct.
The word indoor is struck. All right. With that.
Yes.
With that, any other questions?
What was the second one again? I just want to make sure. With the payment.
Oh.
It did not have to be paid in full.
General Manager, the second item about payment.
No, it does not have to be paid in full.
Okay. And that's what it says here in the second to last paragraph in the agenda.
Yes, it's in Exhibit A under section, I think it's 2.01.20. It talks about what needs to occur, and it talks about the criteria in there. Remember, you wanted us to look at the last year's bill, and that's the amount they would have to pay.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. So, again, that clarification is that payment in advance would be equivalent to last year's bill and not the full bill. All right. Very good. With that, I'd like to open up the hearing to the public for public comment. And, again, as our bylaws say, please state your name and where you're from. And with that, I'll take the first speaker. Seeing no speakers.
Is this for any subject?
No. This is just for the leak adjustments. Okay. All right.
My name is Dennis Wormley. I live in Baywood. And if I understand the leak adjustment changes here, effective now. If you have a problem and you weren't aware of it and you go to the come in and there's no mitigation, is that, will that be the way it's going to be? It's just whatever water was consumed, there'll be no reduction. Is that what I understand?
So what happens is that you stand up there, you have 3 minutes, ask your questions and give your statement, and then at the end it's our purview to address them. So, oh, you're finished? Okay, very good. Seeing no other speakers, I'd like to close public comment. And could we have a clarification to... So again, just for our public, what is the leak adjustment? What will it be going forward? Summarize that.
Okay. Yes, if you can, in Exhibit A, in this part, if you see, you just have to give us the date discovery of the leak, if you repaired it quickly, if it meets all of this criteria. It's at the general manager's discretion to credit up to 50% of the differential between the highest bill and from the previous billing period and during the tenure of that leak. It compares it to the last year. So you do have mitigation. We always have payment arrangements too. So yes. We do have mitigation.
So in the Los Osos CSD Water District,
yes.
We can't speak for Golden State or S&T, but if you get billed every 2 months, if you do have a burst pipe and your bill is significantly higher, there is a mechanism that you can get up to 50% of the overage of the extra that should have been. Does that make sense?
Yes, may I ask a question?
Well, that's
so that's still in effect, is that what you're saying?
We are voting on slight changes in that.
Oh, I see.
That's
up to this time. Still.
Yeah. So this is not normal, but that's okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Okay, with that, I'd like to take this to the board for discussion. Yes.
Go ahead.
Director Holsky.
No, I appreciate staff taking this back to UAC, and my concern was about the amount of the prior billing having to be paid off 100%, so that's been addressed and changed. So I'm fine with the
thank the board and thank the committee and the staff, and we have a vote on this one, right?
Yes.
Right. So I see no amendments to that, so with that,
we need a motion and a second.
Right. So I'd like to take a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move that the board conduct the second reading of Ordinance 2014-01 by title only and adopt Ordinance 2014-01 amending Title II of the District Code.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, call for a roll call vote.
Director Muthart?
Yes.
Director Ohilski?
Yes.
Director Storm?
Yes.
Vice President Wright?
Yes.
President Baltimore?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. At this time, I'd like to move agenda item 8 for items not on the agenda.
Good evening. My name is Steve Vinson, and I'm on the board of directors of the Los Osos Baywood Park Chamber of Commerce. And first thing I want to do is just to come to the board tonight and introduce myself. I'm going to be attending as many political meetings around Los Osos as I can, representing the chamber. But for the most part, I'm going to be coming to you with really announcements on what we're doing, what's going on business-wise, and try to give you all a little information on what's happening. Just right now, I've just got some announcements for you. Our annual mix, monthly mixer is this Wednesday, and it's going to be at the Los Osos Fitness in the Vaughan Shopping Center along with Hairline Salon, which is a new company that's just hit town. The next Saturday is it's an all-day thing happening here in Los Osos. The 27th annual Christmas parade is going to happen this Saturday, December 13th. The theme is Christmas Around the World. It's going to be kicked off in the morning by the Kiwanis pre-parade breakfast, which is going to be at the Bear Valley Garage. Then we'll have the parade. Then afterwards, the 8th annual Needs and Wishes fundraiser right here at the Bay Center, South Bay Community Center. And that's all I have for you. So thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hi, I have a couple of handouts here. There's a mouthful.
My name is Keith Weimer. And as you know, I'm somewhat concerned about seawater intrusion. If we get 3 inches out of this storm, our total for 3 years will be 20 inches, about 40% of normal. We are still in a severe drought, and the basin will continue to have a severe seawater intrusion problem without decisive action. I want to first point out just a few ways the recent seawater intrusion study downplays the problem to some extent. Then I'll stress again that you should not sign off on the basin plan unless it provides real solutions in the short term. Here are a few ways the update understates the problem. It most likely doesn't show the full effects of this drought or even the 2006-2009 drought. It doesn't discuss the potential for seawater intrusion to accelerate once it enters the large pumping depressions that begin at the Palisades well and go all the way to the South Bay well. It doesn't discuss the potential for seawater intrusion to upcone in Zone E, contaminating from Zone E, contaminating Zone D. It only guesses at where seawater intrusion is on the northwest side of the community because we don't have test wells there. It doesn't discuss the adverse effects of climate change. Instead, it downplays it with a misleading graph. It makes the upper aquifer seem like a lot more water can be pumped from it than actually can, because maps make the upper aquifer look about the same size as the lower aquifer when it is only one-fourth the size. This brings me to the basin plan. At the last meeting, Craig called it a living document, apparently getting the public ready for more delays as parties decide down the road programs aren't strong enough after it's been signed off. What good is a living plan if it kills the basin? The basin and the public have waited 40 years for a basin plan. It must provide real solutions and have real teeth out of the gate with near-term enforceable deadlines for maximizing conservation and urban reuse. I've again provided ways to do that in the handouts. I've studied this basin and what's gone wrong for the last...
Golden State Water takeover, and I agree with you, it's unlikely. It's going to be ugly and a very costly fight, and I think the community's tired of fighting. But when you say, look to the financial district as financial equity for the basin, I need to say to all of us and to the district, look in the mirror. There are very few situations where finances in this community have been equitable. With the prohibition zone carrying the burden of basin management for a very long time. But at the Los Osos Community Services District, there's a financial inequity that's been going on since CSA 9. I don't know how it started. I don't know why we couldn't stop it. And it continues today. And that is associated with the general property tax that's being collected each year within the district. Round numbers, 10% of that money has been subsidizing the Los Osos Community Services Water District. The other 80% of that money goes to the fire department. I'm on the Emergency Services Committee. I've seen the goals that our committee and your board has for that department. And the only way to reach them is with money. The inequity by taking that now $180,000 a year of general property tax and putting it towards the water company shortchanges what could be those goals at the fire department. As a member of the Emergency Services Committee, I've brought this up several times, asking that it be put on our agendas and hoping that it would get on the Utility Advisory Committee's agendas, the Finance Advisory agendas, and that finally we get to the board to decide if this really is how we want to continue to operate the water company by taking away what could benefit the entire community at large. And later tonight, it's folded into your rate structure, and I think it needs a real conversation.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good afternoon, Board. My name is Bill Moylan. I live in Los Osos. And I would like to back up what Keith Weimer was talking about as far as saving our aquifers, especially the lower aquifer, which is where we draw all of our drinking water from. And I've read the documents that he handed out. It takes about 10 to 12 minutes to read all of them, and they're well worth reading because there's a lot of important data in them. At any rate, the one thing that I find a little ludicrous is that moving the wells, which we draw from, to the east side of the creek is not going to stem the seawater intrusion. It's all taken from the same aquifer. So it's just like drawing water from a bathtub, one end or the other, the water's going to go down. And I don't understand why simply moving the wells to the east side of the creek to draw water from, unless it's a different aquifer, that makes sense. But if it's the same aquifer, it doesn't make any sense. So I'd like you to please read those documents that Keith handed out and really consider any adjustments that you might make, and especially consider increasing the amount or setting a limit on the amount of water that people can draw individually, just like Cambria has done, which cut their water usage down by a third, which is an amazing amount. And if we did that, if we had limits on how much each household could draw with fines installed if they drew more than their allotment, that would really serve as a deterrent for drawing more water than what the basin can actually give sustainably. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. Seeing no speakers, I'd like to close public comment and move to agenda item 9, administration and committee reports. First report, general manager.
Yes. I'm not Phil Vanaris, but I'm here this evening because Phil is unable to make it. One of the points, his staff report is included in the agenda, but one of the points I really wanted to make, because it was a real issue here with the district, was that he is working with Golden State on the fire hydrants, and he does get into specifics in this report. And
you also have your graphs and tables for your review there. And although we just recently had some rain, we're still in a drought, and we're still promoting our water conservation new logo, and you know, the message that together we can bear it, save Los Osos water. The county still is providing rebates on plumbing fixtures for households that have to be connected to the wastewater project, so you can check out their website at conservelososos.org. And the staff has submitted the monthly monitoring report for the month of October to the State Water Resources Control Board Drinking Water Division, and there were no violations noted. And we've received some rain, and the pumps are all working. So I just want you to know that, and the basins are have some water in them.
and they're percolating. So this concludes my report right now, and I just want to say to have a safe and happy holiday, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Thank you. Any questions from the board?
I just had a comment you had mentioned about just because it's raining, it's not ending the drought, and I thank you for bringing that. And I just wanted to emphasize that because I actually had heard a comment today that somebody said they didn't want to hear about conservation while it was pouring down rain. And that's the time we need to, that's the attitude we just can't have.
Yes.
We won't know how many inches of rain it would take to end this drought. We just don't know, and we have to keep conserving and collecting. Collect your water, collect your rainwater.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, I'd like to move to the general manager's report.
Mr. President and members of the board, staff is pleased to report all the bankruptcy accounts in the financial records are finally analyzed and reconciled. The outstanding accounts payable, the outstanding accounts receivable, the expense categories, the construction in progress, the exhibits, and numerous other accounts from the bankruptcy order were reconciled. All these actions were pursuant to the standard accounting practices and consistent with our auditor's directions. Staff spent the last month analyzing all the prepayment categories in the books since 2009 through 2012. We did this in an effort to minimize and to provide the appropriate corrections. Staff is also pleased to report that using the MIP financial software, we were able to run the trial balance for the first time, and the debits and the credits match. This is very critical, especially as we proceed to get finalize our audit. Staff will also use the MIP financial software to run the financial statements, and the financial statements match the trial balance. This is the first time in CSD's history that that has occurred without working through extensive Excel spreadsheets. We did not do that. The only thing we use the Excel spreadsheet for is to track your reserves, to ensure that every time we take money from the reserves, we record it appropriately, so at the end of the year, we can make the appropriate adjustments. The software produced the documents for the auditors to complete the audit. And additionally, this month, staff continued to work with the county staff regarding the transition of Bay Ridge Estates and Visto de Oro. It is the LOCSD staff is presently developing a plan in concert with the Wallace Group and the county for the transition to meet the date of April 2016. December is a short month. Staff is preparing for the new calendar, for the calendar year end, and all the filing deadlines that are required by the state. We're also preparing for the mid-year, and we started preparations for the new budget. In addition to that, the district office, it's important to note the district office will be closed December 24th, 25th, and 26th. It will also be closed January 1st and 2nd. And with that, happy holidays to all, and this concludes my report.
Thank you. Any questions from the board? No? Seeing none, I'd like to move to the district legal counsel report.
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board, staff, and audience, I'm going to bring an update regarding the ISJ activities. First, it's anticipated during this to an ISJ meeting that will take place, I believe, on Tuesday of next week. But that is on the agenda and something that I anticipate will go forward. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Any comments, questions from the board? All right, thank you. With that, LOCAC report.
Hello, President and Board. I am Jan Harper from LOCAC, District 2. We did not have a meeting in November. Our December meeting is Thursday, December 18th at 7 p.m. here in the South Bay Community Center. We also have a number of upcoming committee meetings. Landscape and Trees will be held Monday, December 8th, 6:30 p.m. here in the South Bay Community Center small meeting room. This group meets bi-monthly, every other month on the second Monday. Traffic and Circulation will meet Tuesday, December 9th at 5:30 in the small meeting room here. The discussion topic for the meeting is the county's update of the bike plan. We will have a presentation by the Bicycle Advisory Commission introducing that process. Traffic and Circulation meets the second Tuesday of each month. Land Use will meet on Thursday, December 11th at 6:30 p.m. in the South Bay Small Meeting Room. Land Use meets monthly on the third Thursday of each month. We have vacancies in District 1 and District 2. There is more information on our website, locac.info, or contact your district's board member. The Community Update Public Draft Report is promised to be out in early 2015 for review. We hope to work with the CSD to conduct review meetings for the community. We would appreciate Los Osos citizens to participate in LOCAC, monthly LOCAC meetings, ad hoc committee meetings, and the community update sessions. The more input provided, the better the decisions and products will reflect the needs of Los Osos. Again, our December LOCAC meeting is Thursday, December 18th, 7 p.m. here. May your holiday season be full of joy. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the board? No. Thank you again. With that, the emergency services did not meet. There is no report. Utility Advisory Committee.
Yes, Mr. President, the Utilities Advisory Committee did meet. It was a joint meeting of the Financial Advisory Committee and the Utilities Advisory Committee meeting. Mr. Alex Handlers from Bartle Wells and District Engineer Rob Miller provided an update of the rate, the water rate structure study, and there was input, a lot of good input put into the provided to Mr. Handlers and Mr. Miller. I won't go into details because we'll be discussing that later in the meeting, but I would like to read the motion that was put forth and voted on and accepted by the committee. The committee reviewed, this is it, the committees reviewed the document and agreed in principle with it, except where they had identified certain areas that needed further research. The motion was second, and it was approved. So I wanted you just to know that going into the presentation later in the evening.
All right. Thank you. Any comments from the board? No. With that, the Finance Advisory Committee.
All right. The Financial Advisory Committee did not have its regular meeting, and I don't know, Michael, if you want to comment any more on the joint meeting that was held with UAC.
No, I think Leonard covered it. I think that we'll see everything that came out of that meeting in the finalized presentation tonight.
Thank you. All right. Any director announcements of district and community interests, reports on attendance at public meetings, training programs, conferences, and seminars?
Do you want? Okay. I have two things. Let me lead with first. I'm going on a trip to Israel for 2 weeks this December, and Israel has water infrastructure very similar to California's on a smaller scale. And I've been invited to take a tour of some of their infrastructure and desalination facilities there by the Israel Water Company. And I'd like anybody in the audience, on TV, the public, anybody at the board who has questions you'd like me to take to our counterparts in Israel about water production, where not everybody sees this, but water associated with the Parks and Rec Fund, And none was, no general fund stream was transferred when the power was activated by LAFCO. As such, we needed to think differently, and we have been pursuing the possibility of a free scientific needs study in connection with Cal Poly. That's still pending. As a live issue, the only thing, even in sort of the early formative stages, is the dog park. We would recommend that we consider to explore that possibility. In conclusion, though, the report is that by the nature of an ad hoc committee, this report concludes that committee, and we suggest a new ad hoc committee be formed next year after the basin plan, rainfall totals, and the fallout of, this is important too, of the county parks reorganization is finished. By then, we hope that the needs study will be in a more concrete phase, and so that we can sort of sit down with a more concrete plan. When I took this on, I wanted very much for the CSD to start, taking advantage of what kinds of services we could explore to provide to the community, or at least make sure that we've dotted I's and crossed T's as to why we can't. Unfortunately, I was still wet behind the ears as a board member at that point, and I haven't realized what government speed is. You talk about this car, it's not a sports car. So December, especially when we're looking for things that, you know, we're not putting out bids and paying consultants for, things that we're kind of relying on the community for, even slower, and volunteer time, and everybody who's given me input, I sincerely appreciate. I've received all kinds of wonderful ideas that just literally never would have occurred to me. So I'd like to thank the public for that. I'd like to thank for Director Wright for helping me out, President Baltimore for, I should say Vice President Wright. I'm so indecorous, but we know that, right? President Baltimore, and I look forward to next year being able to come back with some more concrete particulars, but what I mentioned is the report for now. So thank you.
Thank you. With that, seeing no more reports, I'd like to close agenda item 9 and move on to, well, hang on, first of all. We need to see if there's any items that want to be pulled from the consent agenda. Seeing none, then I'd like to move on to public comments for item on the administrative and committee reports and the consent agenda. Public comment.
Keith Weimer, Los Osos. I picked the wrong time to walk out of the room, so I wanted to ask Mr. Seitz for some clarification. What exactly did you say would be happening with the basin plan? Are the parties agreeing to send it to the court? Will the public get to see it before it goes to the court? Just to answer you, yes, I will be joyous if it includes a provision for maximizing conservation in the next year, reduces water use to 2,000 acre feet, sets an enforceable objective time frame for reversing seawater intrusion, and basically holds everybody's feet to the fire to get the job done. So just like to know clarification on what is happening there.
All right. Thank you. Next speaker.
Good evening, Board. Chuck's the senior resident of Los Osos. First of all, your financial advisory committee, did they really meet in that joint committee meeting? Because I think there were two people there, maybe from the committee. I don't think you had a quorum. So can you say you had a financial advisory committee meeting that really looked at that rate structure? Items 11E and 11F, I think they should be, at least 11F should be pulled for further discussion. E, I don't understand. Setting up a reserve for this kind of a pass-through account to help people with their hookup costs, what's the need for a reserve? Typically, you have a reserve if the operating fund is going to run low, if there's an emergency. I just don't understand. Somebody explain to me what that's all about, please. 11F, why would this board take the bold step of setting next year's committee meetings? It's a different board. I mean, two of you, I would think, wouldn't want any part of that. And Mr. Storm, I think you'd want to work with the new board to set up committee meetings. One of the things that I've noticed in the years that I've been affiliated with this organization is that every administration that comes in has terrible things to say about the accounting practices of the previous administration. When I started, the pan was there are too many accounts. There's no transparency. There's too many accounts. The money's hidden here. It's hidden there. We can't get a handle on where the money is.
Work, Kathy referenced in your report, with the Wallace Group and the transition to Bay Ridge and Vista. What kind of money are we talking that Wallace is accruing with that? I just wonder if it maybe could become something that maybe needed a contract outside of district engineering. The other thing on, I too object to reducing the committee meetings to quarterly. I think there's plenty of work to do in this community, especially with the basin plan and implementation of it, certainly utility advisory, the finances. With your rate increase, you're going to actually have money that your finance committee needs to be looking at and helping the board making decisions going forward. There'll be work and contracts and things to accomplish. And I did notice that the board intends to give Ms. Kivley a $9,000 a year raise. The wrong president is in the signature line of the contract. Gotcha, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And when you give this raise and take away work by reducing committees, you're actually giving even more of a raise. And I still have heartburn with the office hours being from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. for the public to access a services district. The people can't get in there. I get calls all the time saying, I just want to go in and go over my bill with someone. And sure, they can throw money through a slot till 5 p.m., and that's time stamped, but they're not getting service 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 like you would find customarily in the business world.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Richard Margetson. You have two board members that are could be officially seated tomorrow at 12 o'clock. And you're going to undo the committee structure that's been in this community since its existence. If you want to give me 10 minutes, I can tell you what's come out of this committee, the committee structure over the years that's been a positive for this community. You're gutting the public input to this board. And to sit here and actually accept the comment that we're now under government accepted accounting practices, we now conform to them. How did we get a clean audit last year? You mean none of the audits in the past we were adhering to any government accepted accounting practices? And you keep delaying the public input process because you won't hold the finance committee meeting. 4 months now, you have not had a finance meeting to look at the financials. The financials that you provided, the structure's a joke. You have no comparison in the financials to what was done last year. You have no current month totals. What are you afraid of? I've repeatedly pointed out the inadequacies in the district manager's ability to provide financial information that's accurate. Why don't we have Where in this report is the reserve balancing that she's talked about? We haven't seen a cash balance for any of the funds in, got to be 8-9 months. Are you guys seeing those? You're seeing them, but the public doesn't get, or in the future, because we're not going to look at financials in the committee structure, at any of the committee structure, other than budgets. I guess we have to make public records requests and pay for them. That's the fine-oiled machine, Leonard, you talk about, that she's put in place, and you give her a 10% raise. I've said it before, she's stealing for this district, and it's eventually going to catch up to you. It's eventually going to catch up to you. She's not providing.
Take place during the first quarter of 2015.
Thank you. Any other comments? Director Holsky?
No, I just wanted to comment on item E, because that was the item that I had continued from the last meeting, which was the item about the monies invested with the Slo Community Foundation. After further discussions over the last month since that continuance, all we're really doing here, the money will stay invested with the Community Foundation and be dispersed to the needy in the community, but all we're doing here is entering in our books because it's not been shown on our books. So it has no bearing on the distribution of the funds nor the investment of the funds. Community Foundation will continue to hold those. So I know that question came up by Mr. Cena, but after I had it pulled last meeting, my concerns were addressed. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Thank you. I was going to make the similar comment that basically it's just a marker in the books. All right. Any other?
If I might just follow up on one other item. I have been involved in districts in which general managers have embezzled funds, and the way that that was found was through the general audit that is conducted on an annual basis. If anyone in the audience has any evidence that they wish to submit in regards to the general manager's activities that they believe constitutes a crime, they should go to the district attorney's office or the sheriff's department.
Hey, no comments. No comments. I will ask you to leave. Thank you. All right. Director Moonhart, did you have a comment?
Yes, on the item regarding the schedule for committee meetings, that sets the minimum number, right? Committees can, and committee chairs can decide the structure of.
Correct. That's the same clarification I was going to make. That the committee's agenda is set by the board asking the committees for tasks. And what is set for next year are the reoccurring annual tasks that the board wants the committees to do. And right now, those tasks only take up the committees to meet on a quarterly basis. If during the year things come up, additional meetings can be added. But right now, the annual reoccurring tasks of the committees are agendized for the upcoming year, and the committees basically on a quarterly basis. It's knowing what will be asked of the committees when they come forward.
Yeah. I was going to say, you're correct. It's up to the committee chairs for next year if they want to have additional meetings. And like Craig just said, these are tasks that in the past have kind of slipped through the cracks and not been agendized properly. So we wanted to, you know, solidify these needed items that are on the quarterly. And our bylaws do call for we can either have monthly or quarterly. And so the idea is to set this framework up to make sure we don't miss these key items. And if a committee chair wishes to have another meeting, then we'll notice it.
Yeah,
because I'd like to recognize, you know, the Utilities Advisory Committee has some, you know, they've made some wonderful suggestions, valid suggestions for activities, and those aren't going to, that doesn't mean they're not going to be addressed, or, but it is up to the next committee chairs.
Yeah, and I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I think what you said, Director Wright, or Vice President Wright, is the important thing for everybody to understand here. this was set to make sure that specific items were addressed, because there has been some of these items that have slipped through the cracks, as you mentioned in the past. So the intent here is not to minimize the committee's input to the board by any way, shape, or form, but it's to memorialize the fact that there are certain tasks that need to be done. So unless there's additional comment, I'll make a motion.
So moved.
Okay, I'll go ahead and move that we receive and file the administrative committee reports and we approve the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none.
Director Ohilske.
Yes.
Vice President Wright.
Yes.
Director Muthart.
Yes.
Director Storm.
Yes.
President Baltimore.
Yes. All right. I'd like to move to the general action items. And with that, can I have the reading of the first item?
Yes. Mr. President, members of the board. Sure. Yes, we are.
We're getting it.
Okay. The item before you this evening is consideration of approval of a draft water rate study. Presenting the information this evening will be Alex Handlers. He's from Bartle Wells Associates. And assisting him...
As I'm going, please feel free to interrupt, obviously. But the background, this is a community-owned and governed public agency. You serve a population of a little over 15,000 in Los Osos. However, the water enterprise only serves about half the population here in the community. The other half is served by a private water company, Golden State Water Company. You've got a lot of facilities that are in the ground to provide service. A number of them are aging. Some of them are made of substandard materials based on, you know, what you would put in the ground if it was today. You've got five wells, you know, over 27 miles of water mains, number of storage tanks and valves. The big driving factor I think that everyone's concerned about is your groundwater. Like many coastal communities, that's 100% of your supply. You can't easily build a pipeline over the hills many miles away to supply water. It'd be very expensive. Unfortunately, you've got kind of dual threats to your groundwater. One is the long-term degradation from the septic system discharge, and also the overdraft of the basin that's been threatening seawater intrusion. In terms of the finances for the water enterprise, briefly, the water utility is operated like a self-supporting independent business. It doesn't rely on substantial fundings from property taxes, although there are some small level of property taxes that are allocated to the water enterprise. Most of the money comes from water rates. So the water rates are really the underpinnings of the entire financial stewardship of the water utility. They need to be set at levels that can fund your cost of service, which include operating and maintenance costs, debt service, funding ongoing capital needs, maintaining prudent minimum level of fund reserves. All that is embedded in what I call cost of providing service. To give you a little background on where you're starting from, as of July 30th, you had about $1.2 million in fund reserves. We deem this to be kind of a minimum prudent level. It's good you're not lower than this, but certainly the more the merrier when it comes to fund reserves, especially in light of what you're facing down the line. You only have one outstanding debt issue, and that's an iBank loan at a subsidized interest rate. Only about $4 million is outstanding, so you're coming into this again with pretty low levels of debt service compared to a lot of other agencies that I work with. And my general take from looking at the financial history was that the district has done a good job in recent years of trying to keep the rates moving in the right direction to support your funding needs. So good work there. Unfortunately, you are facing some pretty significant challenges. I've kind of boiled those down. I'm just going to summarize them real quickly for everyone. I know people here are familiar with these, but number one is your long-term water supply, and this is a big issue for the community. You're in overdraft. I know the basin plan is attempting to address the groundwater degradation, the long-term overdraft. It's going to have some financial impacts, costs of new facilities. There are some new operating costs associated with that. And one of the goals is to reduce water demand. And as water demand goes down, your revenues go down. So there's a kind of a triple impact there. The next item is a capital improvement program. The board, I think, reviewed and adopted a capital improvement program earlier this year. Over $23 million of projects, and that's in current dollars. We know costs are going to escalate in future years. Part of that was to fund the basin plan requirements, but the bulk of it was really addressing aging and substandard pipelines, some improvements there to improve the system reliability. $23.4 million is a pretty big number. So I guess the good news is only about $5 million is really the high-priority stuff that's needed in the short term. And the assumption is that's going to be funded by debt, some use of reserve funds that have been set aside for that. And we're assuming that, the goal is that the district can obtain some additional subsidized financing from the state. That said, nothing's a done deal yet, but the goal is to pursue that. Long term, you do have a lot of other funding needs out there. And in the projections, we attempted to fund those, to begin funding those on a pay-as-you-go basis. But that's something that can be reevaluated in future years. And if you need to adjust rates more in future years than we're showing in our long-term projections, that may be the case, depending on the timing of when those projects are needed. This slide here just gives a quick breakdown of the CIP costs. I've shown it here before. I'm not going to go into any detail, but it's in the presentation if anyone wants to see what's included there. The other challenge is one I just alluded to, reduced water sales. Water sales have come down in recent years. They're down in the current fiscal year. On one hand, that's great news for your aquifer. On the other hand, it's bad news for your finances, because this is a district that most of your operating costs are, people think of as inflation, the consumer price index, which is for things like purchasing goods in a supermarket, housing costs. Long term, some of the indexes show that utility inflation is closer to 4%, not 2 to 3%, what we're seeing with CPI. So you need a bare bones level of small rate increases just to stay afloat on top of everything else. And finally, the last part of the background I just wanted to show you was a survey of a number of their other regional water agencies. And you can see that year rates for a typical family, typical single-family home that uses 15 units of water on a bimonthly basis, about 7.5 units in a month, you're kind of right in the middle of the pack there with rates that are between $47 and $48 on a monthly basis. Now, you pay your bills bimonthly. The other thing I wanted to show on the chart was the other half of the community, and this is where there's, I know, some frustration for folks living in the other service area served by Golden State Water Company. The rates there are about double for a typical homeowner using the same level. So that's kind of the starting point of where you're at. Obviously, you need rate increases, but a lot of these other agencies, I know, also need rate increases. So we expect you to stay in the middle range going forward. Maybe not exactly where you are here, but, somewhere in the middle, maybe a little bit higher. With that, that leads us to the work that we did, developing financial projections, rate study. The way I think of our work, it really has three components. One was developing the long-term financial projections, and that was used to determine the big picture revenue needs. Where do your overall rates need to go? Within that, we also looked at your water rates and water rate structure. We weren't recommending any major changes there, just some minor tweaks here and there, but we were recommending specific rates to recover your annual revenue needs. And the third thing was developing some emergency water shortage rates. The goal of these rates is to support financial stability in times of reduced water sales. You have a water shortage contingency plan that's already been adopted by the district that has different stages of cutback. It includes different, water use restrictions to hit these different stages, and it includes certain penalties to try to make customers reduce use. And those are, I think, what people have referred to. There's some allocations that each, for example, single-family home gets. If you go over those allocations, you could be hit with penalties that are 2 to 4 times the rate. That's completely different from what I'm talking about from these water emergency shortage rates. and I'll talk about that in a little bit, get into a little more detail there. Throughout the process, I just want to mention we did work with staff and the district's engineering consultant, received a lot of good input, made sure we had the correct information in there, and gained as much input as we can from the Financial Advisory Committee and Utilities Advisory Committee. The only other thing I want to mention before I move on there is with these rate studies, they're never perfect. The information, you try to put in the best information you can, err a little on the conservative side, look long-term and aim your rates in the right direction with the understanding that you can come back in future years when more recent information is available and, again, look long-term. Always be looking long-term and setting course in the right direction. And the other thing is rate studies are always a balance of competing objectives. On one hand, nobody likes rate increases, but on the other hand, everyone wants to fund the things that need to be funded. So with that, we did try to phase in the rate increases as gradually as possible. Considering your starting position, there was a little more bump up in the early years than the later years, but we did try to phase it in so the annual impacts on the customers wouldn't be would be minimized. In terms of the process, we originally kicked this off back in September 10th. It was my wedding anniversary, with a joint meeting of the FAC and the UAC to kind of introduce the study, get initial input from committee members that were there, and there were a number of committee members there, as well as some members of the public. Then we had a board meeting a few weeks after that, back in early October, again, just to kind of present our preliminary findings and set the stage. We received comments from the board, and there was a number of members of the public who shared some valuable comments as well. We then, crunched away on everything and worked pretty diligently so we can come back to the joint meeting of the Finance Advisory Committee and Utility Advisory Committee just a couple of weeks ago to present the draft findings and recommendations, make sure our assumptions that we're using were in line with what the committee thought was reasonable, and got some additional input again from the committee and from the public. And coming out of that, as was mentioned, the committee embraced the general principles of the rate study with some, recommendations for, fine-tuning a few things and looking into a few issues, which we did. And I think one of the things to try to save the water in the basin, and the other side was also making sure, that everything, that the numbers were correct. There were some good details that were brought up that were looked into, and we've made some revisions even since the tables that were originally sent a couple of weeks ago. So with that, tonight's meeting is to present the revised recommendations. The goal is to, depending on what comes out of this meeting, there's still time to make some revisions, but to try to finalize everything in the next week or so that the district can get out Prop 218 notices within a couple of weeks so that they can come back in the February board meeting with the public rate hearing. Tonight, there's no formal action taking that. You won't take any action on rates until that public hearing in what's targeted for February 2015. In terms of the financial projections, again, the goal is to look long-term, try to put everything in there. There's a lot of moving parts, and we try to, look long-term and aim your finances in the right direction so that you can recover all the costs of service that you need and, fund your revenue needs. There's a lot of assumptions that go into it, and I'm just going to highlight a few of them. Obviously, we based it on the current year budget. We did make some modifications based on conversations with staff to make sure that we are including adequate amounts for all the costs. We assume 4% operating cost inflation. We're assuming $4 million of debt financing. You don't have $4 million in the bank, and you do have some very high priority near-term needs. We're hoping it can be with something like an iBank loan, subsidized financing similar to what happened last time, but that hasn't yet been secured. A big thing is water sales. We were assuming that water sales this year were going to decrease 10% from the prior year and an additional 5% in each of the next 2 years. This is the baseline without kicking into your water emergency contingency stage 3 or beyond. We did build in some water sales decreases as your schools convert to recycled water in the future, but we did assume that some of the recycled water revenues would help offset some of those costs. The other thing I'll mention, long-term, debt is a useful tool when you have a spike of capital funding needs. But when you're dealing with these long-term repairs and replacements and rehab of, you know, pipelines, it's best not to use debt. It's best to build something in the rates for an annual pay-as-you-go funding stream to address those. So we did that to the degree possible. We assumed over the next decade you'd be, you know, funding $500,000 per year out of your rates for this pay-as-you-go funding stream. If in the future you decide you need more than that, that can be addressed with rate increases after this first four-year period. And the final thing, always it's good to set a minimum fund reserve target for financial planning. And what we had set for ours, which is embedded in the rate increases, is to maintain a minimum target of 25% of operating, maintenance, and debt service costs, plus $500,000 for emergency capital repairs. So you're just a little bit above that right now, and in our projections you're going to stay above that. Not by a lot, but you will stay above that in upcoming years. This shows just a chart of future finances, which you can see escalating each year. The blue is your operating costs. A lot of the increases there are for cost inflation, but we did add in additional costs for brine removal. The orange section is your outstanding debt, which will be out there for a number of years. On top of that, there's the yellow section for new debt for funding an additional $4 million of the highest priority capital needs. And on top of that, we did assume there was some pay-as-you-go funding happening each year through reserves and also through annual rates. And that's the green section. And you can see the red line going across. That was the budgeted revenues for the current year. And it's not going to hack it in future years, as you can see, as your expenses continue to rise. So those are expenses are what's driving the future rate increases. In terms of rate recommendations, what we came up with is targeted overall rate increases of 15% in each of the next two fiscal years, followed by two overall 7.5% rate increases in the 2 years after that. During that time, it doesn't mean your revenues are going up by this much. Compounded, this is over 50% over 4 years, but it doesn't mean your revenues are going up because we did build in a decrease in water sales. So we assume the revenues were only going up about 37%. So for a typical homeowner, their bill would go up about 37%, factoring in the increased rates and the reduced water purchases. There are two elements to your rates. In the blue section, the white section in the middle, I highlight it in blue, you have a fixed bimonthly service charge that needs to be paid regardless of water use. The current-wise, the low tier increases a little bit less than the highest tier, but that's only because the base to the low tier is $1.63. Meanwhile, the base to the high tier is $7.20. So you can't always look at the percentages. A 10% increase on $1 is 10 cents, but a 3% increase on $100 is $3. It's much higher. Another thing that's often confusing for folks is units. Just about every agency out there uses 100 cubic feet for their units of water. Nobody really knows what that means, but in 100 cubic feet, it's almost 750 gallons of water. So that's $1.63 for 748 gallons of water. Down in the bottom, I just put it into rates per 100 gallons so people can get a sense. Currently, your first tier is 22 cents per 100 gallons. It rises to 96 cents per 100 gallons, so less than a penny per gallon in the highest tier. And those would escalate over the years as shown, with the lowest tier increasing 13 cents per 100 gallons and the top tier 43 cents per 100 gallons. And sorry to run through too many numbers there. Based on input from the committee and also the fact that the district did look into its rate structure and made a lot of what I thought were some very prudent revisions a few years back. We weren't recommending any major changes to the rate structure, but there were a couple of minor revisions that are incorporated in the projected rates. One is that the fixed charges are going to be recovering a slightly higher percentage of overall rate revenues. Right now they recover about 41% of total rate revenues. At the end of the four-year period, if everything goes exactly as projected, it would be about 45% of rate revenues. This doesn't mean that you're jacking up the fixed charges in relation to everything else. This is more of a feature that your water use is going down, so you're recovering less revenues over the years from the variable charges, meaning there's a little higher percentage being recovered from the fixed charges. And the other thing was that we gradually evened out the difference in the volumetric rates between each tier. And when I'm talking about that, the difference in rates from Tier 1 and Tier 2 is $1.44 right now. Then from Tier 2 to Tier 3, it's $2.16, then $1.97. So it kind of bumps around a little bit. And we phased it in so that at the end of the four-year period, the rates are, you know, Tier 1, 2 times Tier 1, 3 times Tier 1, 4 times Tier 1. No magic there. It's just, you know, there's a million ways of doing it. And it's just a cleaner way, I thought, of emphasizing to folks that they're, you know, clearly the rates are doubling, tripling, quadrupling as they step up in these tiers. A couple other things I wanted to mention is the dollar impacts are substantially more on folks in the higher tiers. But the percentage-wise, it's a little bit higher percentage increase on folks in the lower tiers. That's because your rates are very kind of substantially tilted for, you know, incentivizing conservation, particularly at high levels of water use. So low-level users are paying disproportionately less than high-level users. Again, the percentage is slightly higher on the low-level users. It's because they have a lower baseline. And also, the dollar increase for low-level users is substantially lower than it is for high users. Just wanted to mention that. And the other thing is, people can always mitigate the level of rate increases by cutting back on water use. And that's the hope, that people will cut back, not only for their own finances, but also for the sake of your water basin. The next thing I was going to mention is the final thing, the water shortage emergency rates. Again, these are rates designed to support financial stability in times of reduced sales. If you have to go into stage 3, 4, or 5, you're going to be taking actions, penalties, and water use restrictions to drive down water use in response to drought and the needs of the water basin. I mentioned these are entirely separate from the penalties of the water shortage contingency plan. I just want to emphasize that again. The penalties from the water shortage contingency plan, those are penalties designed to drive down water use. If people don't cut back to their reduced level of allocation, they'll be hit with rates that are 2 to 4 times the regular rates to get them to cut back. It's great if people cut back, and that's what you want. Unfortunately, if people do cut back, and what we've seen in other agencies like Cambria, their water use went way down. But the penalties don't recover the recouped revenues because people actually did conserve. So it puts an agency under huge financial stress and could very quickly put you in big deficit mode if you had simply just gone ahead with these penalties, because people will cut back, is what we've seen. So $1,000 of additional costs in stage 5 if you really did need to drive your water use down by 50%. Is that the right amount? It's just what we thought a reasonable approximation. We wanted to make sure we put something in there to account for that. The final thing is, you're going to be phasing these emergency water shortage rates in as you declare these drought emergencies. However, if and when the drought's over and you declare, hey, we went to stage 3, hey, guess what, everyone, stage 3 is over, or our aquifer is back to health, it doesn't mean that water use is going back to normal overnight. In the prior drought of the early 90s, there were a number of other agencies that had emergency drought rates in effect, and when the drought was over, they said, okay, you know, rates go back to normal. The problem was water use didn't go back to normal, and they found themselves running huge deficits. So you have to be careful about phasing out these rates gradually as water use returns to normal. It's going to require more active, I think, monitoring by district staff, but the board can, you know, opt to phase those out in the future. I can't give you predetermined trigger points in advance, but that's something that would need to be monitored as you ease off on the emergency water shortage rates. This slide here shows the different stages of emergency water shortage based on your water shortage contingency plan. You can see in the early stages we're not recommending any additional rate increases. That's because folks are already cutting back, and we've included some additional cutback in the rates, the regular rates that are already being recommended here tonight. However, if you do have to go to stage three or beyond, we did come up with rates that were higher than your regular rates, again, to make up for the revenue shortfall. In stage three, you'd need an additional 9.5% rate increase above and beyond what we are currently recommending in our regular rates. But again, this isn't necessarily translate to a bill increase for people. If people are cutting back water use by 25% of the baseline, they're going to be buying fewer units of water. So this is kind of a break even to make sure the district stays financially whole. And you can see, you know, the higher levels of rate increases for these higher stages. To show you, this would be next year. But the rates change each year, and so the emergency water shortage rates also change each year. And what I'm showing at the bottom of this here is what the emergency water shortage rates would look like in 2018-19, which is the end of the four-year period. The maximum charges that would be put in your Prop 218 notices are for Stage 5 in 2018-19. So, you know, as you declare these stages, we'll have some tables and stuff that the district can use to implement stage 3, 4, and 5 each year, if and when those stages are declared. So I hope I'm not confusing anyone with that. But the next steps coming out of this process, one, those are the recommendations that are currently out there for the board. We would like to get additional input. There is still a little time to make final tweaks as needed, but the goal, again, is to get the Prop 218s mailed out in the next 2 weeks, so we would need to finalize everything within a week or so. Assuming that happens, that would start the 45-day waiting period required by Prop 218. You'd have a public hearing on the rates on February 5th. At that hearing, rates would be subject to majority protest. If you received more than written protests from more than 50% of the property owners, that could put a stop to things. It's rare that happens, but it has happened before, for example, in Cambria a number of years back. The new water rates wouldn't go into effect until July 1 of 2015. However, the water shortage emergency rates, those could go into effect upon declaration of a stage 3, 4, or 5 emergency by the board at any given time. So that kind of concludes the presentation. I'll open it up to questions and to some follow-up comments from Rob Norton.
Yeah, Mr. President, if I could, just a few.
Yes, please.
Comments to augment. We did get a number of comments from the public and the committee, and I just thought I'd highlight a few key questions and issues that have come up in some of the discussions. One is just diving into a little bit of the detail, if you'll bear with me. We're looking at the use patterns in our schools as being something that's important to keep an eye on going forward. Specifically, the Baywood School, their indoor water use from their indoor meter looks awfully light to us, and so we're going to be taking a look at the accuracy of that meter. It seems to be reading quite low compared to what you'd see from a typical school. Now, also, the middle school doesn't have a separate outdoor-indoor meter, so we're constantly trying to estimate, you know, how much 400 to 500 people use. Fortunately, when the treated recycled water comes, you will have a separate outdoor meter, so we'll get true numbers because there's definitely some estimates there. We did have the population of each house. You could do that at the time that you implement those stages, but it wouldn't affect these rates necessarily. And that also goes to the specific triggers that were adopted, not necessarily affected by these rates. One thing that you should keep in mind is that in the capital projects, there's one project in particular, and that's the Program C well, which is an easterly lower aquifer well. About $1.5 million may be subject to funding through the Community Facilities District. Right now, it's built into rates. We didn't want to risk not being able to fund that project. But in the event that there is alternate funding, that's a fairly overall a minor issue with respect to rates. But it was important to mention that there's sort of a belt and suspenders approach to that. And also, with respect to reserves, there are a number of your reserve line items for things like water quality reserve and vehicle funds and so forth that may need some clarification at the staff level to make sure you know which reserves you can use for which types of expenditures. And also last year's net revenues, where those are ultimately going to end up in terms of reserves. Those are just some of the issues that we heard, and we really appreciate the public digging into the detail there, and I know we'll have a good discussion tonight.
All right. Thank you. Any questions from the board? Director Storm?
Yeah, I just have a question. Was in the report, you talk about you have a Bartle Wells generally prefers to work with existing rate structures, and you're kind of that's kind of the way you went with this. And you say, well, there's some people can feel unfairly burdened. Can you give an example for everybody of how a different structure might change things up on people in a way they wouldn't understand? So that I can kind of put a concrete, I mean, I guess it's a hypothetical, not concrete, but I can understand what you're getting at with that.
Sure, yeah. And to back up one thing, you know, you have a rate structure that was kind of developed with the last process. You had a lot of, you know, community input into that process with the, I guess, the rate committee. So we thought that when we looked at it, it looked like your tier break points made a lot of sense, that the rate structure was reasonable, and also direction we got from the dual FAC and UAC committee was that they weren't looking for a wholesale build new rates from the ground up. There's a million ways of doing rates. None of them are, you know, the only correct way to do it. So the problem is when you're doing rate increases and you're changing the rate structure, sometimes there's a double whammy on folks. For example, if you change the rate structure, let's say you had a uniform rate for all water use, well, that would drive up rates on low water users and decrease the bill for high water users. So that alone would be a big impact. And imagine doing that on top of a case where you're doing 15% rate increases a couple of years in a row. Then you almost get a double whammy effect of some people are going to be, you know, winners and losers of the rate structure change, but the losers of the rate structure change and the overall rate increase kind of hits them with a double whammy. And I've just seen in other communities where, you know, people are changing the rate structure and doing rate increases, there's people who feel that, hey, how come my rate's going up 30% and their rate's only going up 3%? No fair. They don't feel like there's an equal sharing of the burden. So that's what I was getting at with that comment. Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions? I just got one quick question. You said it in many different ways. So how often would you recommend, now, you know, it's going to be directly pointed to you, so you might say every day, but that we have this sort of rate study review?
No, that's a good question, but there's no single right answer. I think, you know, what we did was try to project rates for the next 4 years with a hope that we were built it enough stuff to get you by the next 4 years. Will the finances come in exactly as projected? I can tell you, no, they won't. You're going to have some things that are worse than projected and some things better than projected. Hopefully, it's not all in one direction, with the goal that this will get you through next 4 years while keeping you're financially stable and maintaining your financial health. You know, maybe your fund reserves will be a little lower than projected, maybe a little higher than projected, but at that point, you could review them again. However, nobody knows what the future holds. And if something happened 2 years down the line, there was some new emergency operating expenses, your wells are no good, seawater intrusion requires, you know, building of an emergency desal facility, everything's up in the air. And at that point, you need to take another look and make sure that the rates were supporting your finances. Right. So the goal is that this gets you through the next 4 years. And with the emergency water shortage rates, those would account.
I agree with Rob just a little bit. I think that plan is flawed enough so that you won't be able to assess the actual water reduction from that or the revenues exactly. But I know that there's a likelihood that you will move this forward. So what I'm going to do today is to recommend four improvements to this rate study and the water shortage plan, and I think you'll agree that they are essential. For the rates, first, the rate structure should include more funding for conservation. It provides only $35,000 a year out of a yearly budget of $2 million, which increases to over $4 million in the years we pay the basin plan to infrastructure for infrastructure to move wells. $35,000 is an embarrassment, really, for a community with serious seawater intrusion. It should be at a minimum $200,000 a year. This would fund some good programs, especially the sorely needed outdoor programs. The rate study, it used to project $200,000 for Stage 5. I guess that was reduced to $150,000. But let's avoid Stage 5. Let's put the $200,000 in our regular rate structure and just not have to go to a Stage 5. It would be just a fraction of what is spent to move wells, and it would do much more to stop seawater intrusion. Second, the water shortage plan must treat people equally by allocating water equally. Right now, it has different allocations for every household size, exempts 1- and 2-person households altogether. Cambria's program treats people equally, and it's very effective. I suggest very reasonable budgets, equal budgets, in that handout I gave you. Third, the triggers for the water shortage program should be more conservative so that we are in a Stage 3 right now. It has the climate trigger was put on hold. It should be put back into effect and tweaked if needed. I believe it sets 29 inches for 2 years as a trigger for Stage 3, and we've had 29 inches for 2 years, and we've had 20 inches for 3 years. So we should be in Stage 3 right now. Also, the 150 milligram per liter of chlorides at 8th Street and 10th Street wells allows seawater intrusion to actually put those wells out of service before you can really have an effective plan into place, possibly. Finally, the penalties for going over water budgets, and I think this was addressed, should be enough to ensure the plan is effective, but they're just deterrents. They're not going to help offset the cost of reduced water sales. And I believe it sounds like the rate study has been adjusted so that those costs will be covered, which I appreciate. But right. Cambridge Thank uses you. 5 to 10 times over, Thank and there's, you. They're very effective, so make Thank sure you. They're effective.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and thank you, Alex. Let me guess which Finance Committee member was advocating for the more aggressive approach, because we have fights at our house all the time. And what we fought about on my way out the door tonight was that $180,000. I want it over in the fire fund, and he wants to move forward, get some capital projects going. You said that the $180,000 was a small amount of money. Well, in the scheme of things, perhaps it is, but it could knock out 4 of your lowest priced, high priority projects on the CIP today. So, it's not a small amount of money. And if it is a small amount of money, let's see what it looks like spread out throughout the rate structure. Is it $1 a month? What is it? What really is it? And two of you now, board members, are Golden State customers who are paying that $180,000 and not receiving any benefit from it. Tomorrow, another Golden State board member will be on board, and then the majority. You should be looking at what that means, and then what do you apply that money to? Maybe it's what Mr. Weimer just said, the conservation element that benefits the whole basin. I don't know, but let's have the conversation. I was looking through the CIP list, and
I guess I'm disappointed that these large sewer mains on 7th Street and 11th Street couldn't have been coordinated with the sewer construction. Those roads have been fully restored, and you're going to go in there and ruin them, and we're going to pay to repair them. And I just find that the county has been following.
Oh, damn well that's what I meant, because I made that exact comment in closed session.
That has nothing to do with this
I'm on
issue.
To my comment about
no,
this.
No, you are done speaking. You knew the rules. You know exactly what you need to do, and you came up here and made a comment that is not in this agenda item. You abused that speaking podium. You are done speaking on this item. That was a flat-out abuse.
You better ask.
We are done.
You better ask. You better ask counsel.
You better ask counsel
before I contact an organization that you don't want to hear from. Better
Am
ask
I out
counsel.
Of line, counsel.
Am I allowed to continue on the subject matter?
Number one, the comment that he originally made is out of order, but he should be allowed to use his remaining time if he's going to talk about the agenda item.
Are you going to talk about the agenda item?
I want the time put back that you disrupted my comment.
So we are clear. If you do not talk about the agenda item, you are done speaking. Are we clear? Then I guess we're done speaking.
No, I'm ready to go.
Are you going to talk about the agenda item?
I'm not a little kid, Craig. I'm not going to be treated this way. Turn the clock on. I'm going to talk to the agenda item.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're done.
Turn the clock on.
10 years ago, Keith Swanson and I corrected the Tuckfield report. I've been a member of the last two subcommittees on rate structures for this district. I have no problem with the model that's being used. My problem is this has not had a thorough review of the Finance Committee, and I don't think it's had a thorough review of the issues that Mr. Miller brought up. And more than 50%, maybe 75% of those comments, he's talking about things I brought up to him. When the committee asked me to meet with him after that joint meeting, and I spent an hour in his office in San Luis Obispo last week, the week after, before that, he brought those issues to your attention tonight. I don't believe they're for future consideration before you put this out to the public. When you're talking about a cumulative rate increase over the next 4 years of 56, 57%, even though the net may only be 37%. Those issues need to be addressed. This community is getting hit with a sewer bill, increased water rates, minor increases in the special fire tax, increases in property taxes. We haven't even gotten to the lateral hookups yet. Dollars mean something to people in this community. We have a substantial percentage of this community that's on fixed incomes. Dollars mean something. Putting this off 1 month and not being afraid to have the Finance Committee actually delve into this now that it's almost final and get the answers to those questions about the issues Rob brought up, I think are pretty damn important. And if you're not going to do anything about it, don't ever ask me again to meet with him.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
And my name is Lee Harry. I live in Los Osos. I had no intention on speaking tonight. However, I would like to say that the report that is brought forward to you tonight, I think Alex and his firm did an excellent job of presenting it. But I'd like to look at it from a macro basis. When I was in charge of water districts, this come up time and time again, where for years they didn't have any rate increases or they had marginal rate increases. Now you are in what I would consider the fourth year of trying to rectify that problem. So within the next 4 years that you have this rate study to go into effect, what you hope to achieve after that, in my estimation, is further rate studies being cost of living increases. You got your capital and your operating program. You get that on speed. It takes time and it takes some hurt to the public. But I just wanted to say that this is something that needs to occur in this district. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hello, Mr. President, and all the rest of you here. My name is Leslie Sands. I've been a resident of Los Osos since 1996. I'm speaking on behalf of myself and many other people that I've spoken with. We have, my husband and I, two-person household, have cut back our water way down. Turned off our watering timer. We're watching our orange trees, lemon trees die. You know, we're very thankful for this rain, but without it, I think they would have completely. People that are getting good incomes, that are still getting paid, the county just is giving $1,000 to all the county employees. They don't seem to be having any problem, but those of us on caps and bold, fixed incomes, that means we're not getting any cost of living increase. We don't have pension adjustments. So we keep having people ask for more and more and more and more and more from us, and we're just wondering where we're supposed to come up with it. Or maybe you just want us to sell our houses and move, and when they're resold, they'll sell for more than what we purchased it for, and then the county will be happy because they're getting even more taxes. Ridiculous. So we're just looking at it from a practical standpoint. And I also want to make sure that when you send out a letter that describes the protest process, that it's absolutely crystal clear. Because I was reading about some things that went on in Pomo recently, and I think there was some real confusion there. For instance, we know people who rent and pay their own water, and other people who rent and the landlord pays the water. That's just a clarification that will need to be made as far as, excuse me, but who gets to send in the letter of protest.
Okay.
So it's there's no confusion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lynette Tornatsky, Los Osos. I am very, very sympathetic to the prior speaker. I really don't have any response to that other than that these water projects have been put off and put off and put off. We've had some terribly irresponsible things happen with the CSD that caused a bankruptcy, which put a huge dent in addressing these projects a long time ago. We really need to address them. I can't even imagine how much money we'd lose putting it off 1 month. So a committee, which may or may not show up to the meeting, can opine on this. So frankly, I think you need to move ahead with this. We have sat on our hands. Sometimes our feet have been nailed to the floor for a very, very long time, and I think we really need to move ahead with this. And I am truly sympathetic to people that this is going to impact, but that's just the cost of living in this town. Thanks.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Dennis Wormley from Los Osos. I was looking at your report, a great report, the financial challenges on page 8, and what I was going over in my head was customers who conserve can offset part of their rate increases. I didn't see much meat on that bone, and like previous comments, people are quite concerned about the cost of rates going up here, and I'm not going to go over those again, but my Social Security bump of 1.whatever percent this year looks kind of puny compared to 15% rate increase here that you've got coming up. I think it's quite regressive, the fact that you've got the base rate and the first tier going up that high. That's going to be real hard on folks. And I know you're aware of that, but I just wanted to reiterate it. Expenses are going up, and I sure would like to see a lesser rate than 15%. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no more speakers, I'd like to close public comment and bring it back to the board. Okay. Director Ohilski.
Yeah, I appreciate the presentation by both of you. I'm just trying to clarify something in my own mind, and I'm really looking at the rate recommendations on page 15 of the presentation here. And I'm not a math wizard, so you guys will have to bear with me here. But if I take, for example, if I look at the equivalent rate for 100 gallons, and if, and I'm just generalizing here, but if we look at a target figure of 50 gallons per person per day, so if we take a two-person household, am I correct, over the four-year period at Tier 1, their rate would increase by $3.90 over the four-year period? Is that, am I interpreting this correctly?
You're saying, you're talking about someone using 50 gallons per day?
Per person. So that's 100 gallons per day.
Oh, for two people?
Per household times 30. So their increase would be $3.90 at the end of the 4 years. Is that correct? I'm taking the 13 that you have and multiplying it times 30. I guess that's what I'm...
Any...
I was going to say, I think, you know, Table 26, which actually has the projected rates over time, is beneficial to the public also, to just compare their bill with the, that's on page 45.
Page 45.
It's one of the colors. And that, and the 7 monthly use, that's the district average, is that my understanding? If I remember correctly.
Yeah, right now you're at about 7.5, what it's been last year, but it's probably, you know, decreasing to 7. So I thought that was a, you know, reasonable approximation.
I think, you know, for the public, I think this is a good summary of to see where you really are. If you take a look, see what your usage is, and go across, you'll see what the increases are going to be over time. And that, like with our number 7 usage over 4 years, your increase is $21.46 per month over time. So I think it's a useful table for comparison.
And I'll just add, that assumes no decrease in water use.
Correct.
That assumes you stay at 7 the whole time. If you go from 7 to 6, it's another, you know, less of an increase.
Correct.
So can I, I'm still trying to understand this, because so if I use that line 7, so right now, we do bi-monthly billing, okay, so just, I mean,
times
you, already,
two.
You already said that. So the increase, if you're at Tier 7, the increase from this rate structure to the proposed rate structure in the first year would equate to about $12 a month. Is that correct?
$12 bi-monthly.
Pardon me, 12-month bi-monthly,
yeah.
Yes, you're
$6
correct.
A month. Part of it's from an increase in the fixed charge, and part of it's from an increase in the variable charge.
I'm just trying to give the public a number as to what the monthly charge would be. So it equates to, for the average user, approximately $6 per month or $12 a bi-monthly billing period. Correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
All right, any other comments from the board? Well, what you guys think? I'll throw in one. And it has to do with that Tier 1. I have these discussions often. So Tier 1, hang with me on this, if you will. There are fixed costs that everybody has in life. And so Tier 1, a person has, let's just say, they keep at Tier 1, they have $10 available to them. The people that use Tier 4 money, they think in terms of $100. They don't think in terms of $10. And their basic life costs are $10. And so they've got $90 extra to spend. And so a rate increase to them doesn't have the same impact that it does with the Tier 1 person, where they only have $10 and we're taking all that $10 away. So one of the things that I hope may be able to be adjusted before the 218 is that right now the difference between Tier 4 and Tier 1 is 4.5 times, and we're reducing Tier 4 to 4 times. And if anything, that should be the other way around,
Tier 1 should not be burdened as highly, and we're not talking dollars per se, we're talking percentages, should not be burdened as highly, and Tier 3 and 4 should be burdened higher. Again, because the actual fixed incomes cost, you can't save 25% if you're using 50 gallons a month. Okay? Oh, you can, but it's really, really difficult. Okay? So to say that somebody can make up, they're in Tier 1 and you got to save 25% more, and you got, you know, I'd like to really see that switched to a different weighting. Does that make sense?
That's a valid comment, and that came up. I think one of the members of the public brought that up in the joint committee. A couple of things I'll just address about that. Your rate structure is very steeply tiered, so it's not like you're overburdening the low. You're trying to keep rates low for low users, and we try to maintain that here. The only reason the percentage is a tiny bit higher is because these folks' rate is so much lower than this rate at the upper end. And so at the end, the rates are disproportionately tilted towards the higher user. So you already have that. So you're already giving a break to the low user, and a pretty substantial break here. There's one other point I wanted to make. So I understand you take the percent. You're right. The percentage of $1.63. If it go, you know, this one only goes up 97 cents. This one goes up 3.20. So you're, even though the percentage wise it's not as high, you're really widening that difference by multiple dollars between the first and fourth tier in real dollar terms. And the other thing I wanted to just mention as an aside is, these days I think you need to come up with a cost justification for these tiers. No one for that, and part of it was the cost justification.
I understand that, and so one of the reasons, as I talked to my board, that we might be able to justify it with the cost is that pumping of water has shown to have a direct effect on our seawater intrusion, and high water users pump a lot of water, and so it's not a simple. I mean, there is a big, big effect to have people at the high end not use it. And if they are, then there's going to be significant costs to us as a district to fight that seawater intrusion. So the more water that's pumped on the high end, the higher costs we have fighting seawater intrusion. So I like to think that that high end can be weighted more heavily than it currently is. So, just putting it out there to my board.
If I could just comment, number one, the rate consultant is somebody who, if these rates were ultimately challenged, would have to support it. What you're talking about, President Armstrong, is something
President
that would
Armstrong.
Be...
Armstrong? Are you at Cal Poly now?
Yeah. My apologies.
I'll take his paycheck, though.
Yeah, President Armstrong, right. President Baltimore. What you're referring to is something that would that the rate consultant would have a very difficult time supporting in because we do have a plan that we talked about earlier in terms of dealing with high water users, especially during drought conditions, but also as a part of our overall plan for reducing water usage. And to burden the rate consultant by artificially adding that into the percentage increases for high water users, I think would be very difficult for him to support in any court. And second, it won't be most likely the low water user that challenges these. It'll be the high water user right. That does. So,
well, at a minimum, all percentages increase be the same. Because right now, as I calculate, it's 59% for Tier 1 and 44% for Tier 4.
I think the rate consultant can give you better information, but if you start at a lower number, any increase appears to be higher than if you start at a higher number. So
he's the engineer.
A percent is a percent.
It is percent, but I don't know if percent's always the most valid way to look at it because, you know, Ross Perot said, 100% increase on a penny is a penny. You know, so everything's based on
correct,
that base.
Correct, but if you only have a penny to spend, you can't spend two pennies.
But Tier 1 goes up, less than a dollar over 4 years, while Tier 4 goes up 3.20, and it's already super tilted. To the benefit of the low-end user, I totally understand your
question,
point.
How hard would it be if it was just everybody was increased 52%? Would that be hard to justify?
Yeah. Well, you can come up with a justification for anything, and like you're saying, we did already tilt stuff in coming up with a justification for these tiers you know, I don't even know what my comfort level is. I don't know how courts would interpret this stuff. And I've talked to some of the attorneys who are experts in Prop 218 to ask them about this very issue, and it's a little bit of a gray area. Can you just do all rates across the board, percentage-wise? Sure, that's another way of doing it.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, I'd like to piggyback on that if I could. One of the things, and I know you were involved in the Cambria CSD, but one of the things that I've discovered in my discussions with them is what you're talking about, actually part of that is for water conservation, so it deters consumption. So if your upper tier users reduce consumption, what you're doing is automatically increasing the rates on the lower tier users, because those rates have to be made up somewhere. So that's why I think it's really a balancing act as to how do you do it so it maximizes everybody. Or pardon me, not maximizes, but that the pain for everybody is minimized. Right. So, but I think that's one thing that I learned in talking to members of the Cambria CSD, and that was a fine balancing act. Where does that happen where you start to make it so penalized at the upper level that they stop using consumption, and then you're going to have to increase rates on the lower users? Right.
No, it's good. I basically want to discuss this so that we kind of get an idea of all different angles, and it's not just put forward and rubber stamped.
Well, I think the other thing you got to look at, too, is I think we're generous in the fact we do have four tiers, because Golden State, as I know, has two. Yes. Yeah, I mean, my tier one goes all the way to 16. You know, so, you know, we have a much better, I think, spread for everybody.
And any other comments?
You mentioned the CPI is not a reliable measure of the costs that would be, you know, that we're preparing for. I mean, I know that generally with government, just salaries and whatnot, I think you generally put 1% over real, and so this is something like that that you built in here. And so what that reflects, too, is that to some extent, being able to do things now, especially if on the large assumption financing is available, is, in other words, you're getting it at a discount over inflation, what you'd pay later, because we're financing this on real dollars. The bond money, the interest rate, does not adjust for inflation. It's not a TIPS. It's not adjusted, right? So our money, we have to look at it in real dollars, not in nominal dollars. And so, in other words, to put this stuff off does also have a cost you have to sort of put on the other side of the scale. I guess that's probably the main reason I'm for this, I think, is it seems perhaps penny-wise and pound foolish to put off especially some of this stuff. Is that
you've got to cover your cost of service, and that's what this is designed to do. And part of those costs of service in future years,
cost for that, really want to look at the other side of the coin and then see if it looks how that looks. Otherwise, it seems like, well, you know, some people might perceive this as you're kind of, you know, kind of like your typical New Deal liberalism, where we're going to build a bunch of stuff and finance it, but do we really need it? So I think I've gathered that some of these are rather emergent in their need. So can you describe, for the benefit of everybody and myself included, how emergent some of these things are and what the consequences of not doing them would be?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the projects that are focused on water supply are as urgent as a special district could see. You know, we have, unlike some of the other local communities that are very concerned about the possibility of seawater intrusion, we have active and advancing seawater intrusion. And those projects that are supply-related, I think, are, I would have liked to have seen them funded already and already in construction. I think they're urgent, and there's a cost in lost aquifer capacity to allowing seawater to continue. That could result in some very high future costs, you know, out-of-town water supply projects, desal, those kinds of things we don't even like to talk about because they're just so unreasonably expensive. As far as your asbestos cement, water pipe replacement, maybe responding a little bit to public comment. We didn't really know how challenging those pipes were until we began to dig next to them with the wastewater project, seeing all the weak points. In fact, some of those pipelines were not slated for replacement in previous capital improvement projects, but very fragile state, those asbestos cement pipes. Can you wait on those? You can until you begin spending good money after bad repairing leaks on an emergency basis, which is very expensive on a per linear foot basis compared to going through and methodically replacing what's old. And so that's a cost that by the time it grabs you, it's kind of too late. Now you're just spending out emergency dollars where you should have had planned, march forward and fix it. A lot of those pipelines are off the side of the street, not in the paved area. And so we do have the ability in almost every section of those high-priority projects to avoid major pavement disruption. Fortunately, there will be some. But that kind of gives you a context.
All right, thanks. I'm done.
I'm not sure how to address. I feel like I'm so close to this because I've gone through this starting many years ago, and I've been to every single meeting, including the subcommittee meeting with Alex. And I think we've definitely given this due process of thought. It's a major balancing act. We have rates that are, for the most part, not the most expensive starting out right now. But our water is extremely valuable. Mr. Weimer's points are well taken, and those are some very, I don't want to call them extreme, but those are measures that would be nice to have. But I think we also have the economics and the demographics of the area to consider as well. I believe that through all the committee work and through all of the work that we've done through the committees, through the board, trying to get these rates in there along with the emergency shortage rates, which is really where, if it wasn't for the emergency shortage rates, we may not have even been at this point. We may have been able to just continue on the path that we were and done this, but the complications of all those involved. So I am in support of this. I think that I've consulted with Rob earlier about the concerns that the committees brought up or the public brought up, and I feel like we are we've really done a good job to kind of go through this.
Work on their emergency shortage rates and the penalties. What they did was implemented some very high penalties, 5 and 10 times the regular rate for going over 50 gallons per day per person. So if you want to get water use down, you could have huge penalties that you threaten over people, and they'll get their water use down. In Cambria, their water use was starting lower than yours and drop back even lower. So I think people across the spectrum can get down, but you're right. It's easy to get down the high levels of outdoor water use. It's not as easy to get down the indoor water use, but people can cut back, and I've seen it in other communities too, where tier one went down, 15%, whereas tier four was 20%. So it went down across the spectrum, but a lot of people already have, I think, cut back. To your point, and I think it's a valid alternative for the board to consider the emergency water rates. You can apply them as you want, provided you don't exceed the levels shown in the Prop 218 notice.
So can't exceed those. Okay. All right. Well, with that, Is there any further discussion? If not, do I have a motion?
I move that the board approve the draft water rate study, set a public hearing for February 5th, 2015, and direct staff to prepare the Proposition 218 notice at least 45 days prior to the public hearing.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Is there any discussion on the motion? There is from me. I just want to say again with the emergency water rates, and please correct me if I am wrong. If the 218 passes with these emergency water rates, with the boards going forward, these are the maximum. We are not, don't have to implement those. So if we want to make tier 1-0 in the emergency, we can do that. But if we were to eliminate it now, we could not do anything to that. So the emergency water rates on this 218 are maximums, and when the time comes, the board can implement that up any portion that they want. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and I think just for clarification, my understanding is that's what we've done with the fire tax. We haven't increased it automatically. We've looked at it each annual year and decided whether to take it or not.
Right.
So I think this is the same thing, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Except that.
And just one quick comment. I forgot which speaker it was, but to be really clear whether this is a resident or a property owner type thing going forward, you know, that clarity will help. So any further discussion?
Well, just to add on to that.
The 218.
Yeah.
Can we answer that question right now? Is it resident or property owner?
Oh, who gets to... I don't want to say there's any guaranteed thing. I'm going to defer to your attorney. There's different interpretations. Some agencies mail to the property owners. Some also mail to tenants. But it's one protest can count per parcel. And that will be clarified. And it depends on, I think, the district's prerogative and how it wants to count those.
Right.
That's correct. But the main thing is that there's only one vote or one protest. Excuse me. Use of the word vote is a bad terminology. There's only one protest per property. And if you have three property owners and one protest, it's still a protest for that property.
So a renter?
The renter could potentially, if we include renters, okay, and more than likely we are, but if the renter votes or protests, that protest counts for that property.
So that's all. We're just asking that it be clarified when these notices go out.
Right. Yeah, and yeah. I don't know why you're saying that's likely, because in the past we have only done property owners. We've never done tenants before.
We'll take a look at it.
I mean, it's something we can look at, but in the past we've only done property
owners. So just take a look at it and just make it crystal clear. That's what I was asking.
Actually, when the board votes to do this, I think that needs to be clarified. All I'm saying is our past record has always been property owners.
Well, then clarify it. So property owners is what Director Ohulski is saying. From a historical perspective, is that need any further discussion? No? Okay. With no further discussion, I'd like to call for a vote.
Director Muthart.
Yes.
Director Storm.
Yes.
Director Ohulski.
Yes.
Vice President Wright.
Yes.
President Baltimore.
I abstain. No, I'll vote yes.
A yes vote?
Yes.
Thank you.
Without the old restrictions that used to obtain. So once again, I know we went it over again, and I just want to make sure that once again I thank you for your service. It's been a pleasure working with you, and have happy holidays, and we'll see you around.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Director Ohulski, any comments?
Yes, I get to do the Christmas parade because I'm early on in the loop here today. So the Christmas parade, 12/13, which is a week from Saturday, and also the fundraiser that occurs at this location right after. So I'm looking forward to everybody's participation in the parade on December 13th down Los Osos Valley Road, terminating at this ferry location. And that, with that, I'll wish everybody happy holidays.
Very good.
And I would like to thank again both you and Leonard for your service over the past 4 years.
Well, I'm actually going to go to Vice President Wright and leave Director Moothart.
Okay. Well, I'd like to also add my thanks to both you, Craig, and Leonard for being a good mentors to me. I've learned a lot. And I think your input's going to be missed, but I think, like Director Storm is mentioning, maybe now we can discuss things outside of the Brown Act. Getting in trouble. Yeah.
Oh, you get that one.
Oh, okay. And also like to, looking forward to working with our new directors, Lou Tarnowski and Chuck Sasenia. And I'm sure we'll have a good year next year. And the other thing we get to announce here is the Firefighters Benevolent Association, Operation Santa Claus. And they, CAL FIRE and the Firefighters Benevolent Association has Operation Santa Claus Toy Drive, and they do have, you can drop toys off at KSBY and any fire station. And please do that, and also happy holidays to everybody.
Thank you. Director Moothart, any closing comments?
Well, I have a couple of, no singing, come on. Happy holidays. There is the 9th Annual Needs and Wishes Holiday Fundraiser, December 13th, 2014, open house from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. That's in this room here. It's a great follow the parade all the way down to where it ends here at the community center and enjoy a great holiday experience and the benefit Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter, Transitional Food and Shelter, and the Slow Nor Clinic. Yeah. Unfortunately, I will miss it. I'm out of town, but Craig and I and Director Wright had that pleasure last year. It was a little different this year, but we raised over $1,200 through our group. We had a reverse fundraiser going on. So many of us were growing mustaches, but we were actually raising money. There was two people in our company that sported over 60 years of mustache. So one person had not shaved his mustache in 42 years, and the other person 20 years. And we beat the goal, and they had to shave them off.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So thank you to Don Barton and Donovan Kreiser. So many people in town know Donovan.
Donovan Kreiser.
Never seen him without a mustache. Catch him before it grows back. And it's growing fast.
All right. I got one business announcement, and that is there was a mailer that came out. I saw it in my mailbox, but on October 28th, the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors approved the garbage rates to be raised 2%, so effective January 1st, your garbage rates will be 2% higher. If you have any questions, you may call the garbage company at 543-0875. And then with my final closing comments, the microphone, I want to say that my blessings and my time and talents allow me to be in this position and serve the community. I definitely look at this as community service, and I'm happy to give and be a part of my community. I've been blessed with two wonderful children with health and intelligence such that they can take care of themselves on these long nights. I mean, it really is, and they also understand that too. And I believe that Director Moothart and I, with the work that we've done with this board and the staff and our general manager and our council and the Wallace group,